And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is public-private. All of my guests are discussing topics that are either public or private. My next guest is an internet entrepreneur, video podcast host, Flash action script guru, and computer book author, including books on Apple's Macintosh. We'll discuss the culture of cool that surrounds Apple today and why that hasn't translated to the Macintosh computer. If you want to join in the conversation, or if you're a Mac aficionado, give us a call at 639-0008. Gary Rosenzweig is the founder and chief engineer of Clever Media, an internet content creation company specializing in web-based games and video podcasts. Gary is the creator and the host of MacMost, an Apple enthusiast website and video podcast that teaches people how to get the most from their Mac, iPod, and iPhone. Gary has published 13 mass-market books on Shockwave, Flash, and Macintosh computers. Recently, he penned the MacMost.com Guide to Switching to the Mac. Originally from Philadelphia, Gary graduated from Drexel University in 1992 with a degree in computer science. He then went on to get a master's degree in journalism and mass communication from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He now lives in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Gary. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I love to have industry leaders and experts on the show, even if they did go to UNC Chapel Hill to get their degree. I'm a Duke graduate, and so I'm trying not to hold that against you, Gary.
Yeah, I figured that. As soon as you said that, I must have gone to Duke.
You knew the story. But yeah. Let's dive into it. Macintosh is one of my favorite subjects. Been a Mac owner since 1984 with the old 512, if you can imagine that. 11% market share in the overall combined PC market. Now, it's interesting because Apple created the culture of cool surrounding the iPod, the iPhone, and the iPad. And the halo effect on the other Apple products has certainly increased Macintosh's market share. It's now up to about 9%, down from its low at 2%, according to IDC. However, the iPad and the iPod, they own gigantic market shares in their space. So why doesn't the Macintosh own a similar percentage of market share in the PC space?
Well, I think it's always just come down to price. For the last 10 years or so, you've had this low-end PC market where you can pick up PCs for, you know, $400 or $500 or even cheaper. And Apple's never competed in that space at all. And that's just got to be huge numbers for the PC market.
True, but I mean, the main competitors that you see when it comes to that are Hewlett-Packard, which of course absorbed Compaq, so that's all of that, as well as Dell. Those are probably the two big dogs in the space. And while Dell does have some low-end computers, Hewlett-Packard definitely isn't the price leader when it comes to computing. So you think the price still applies, or is it just diluted because of all of the PC clone manufacturers that are out there?
Well, yeah, and I don't think it even comes down so much to the brand you were talking about. I mean, you can walk into, say, a Walmart. I walk out with a PC with, you know, monitor, everything for like $400, and there's nothing on that end in the Mac market. And you're going to get, of course, a, you know, slower, older processor, you know, with that, and not very good quality parts. But still, there's a lot of people that just look at the price and say, well, does it will hook me up to the internet? Can I send email? Okay, well then I'll spend $300 instead of spending $1,000 on an iMac.
All right. Well, Gary, during those days when Steve Jobs was kicked out of the company and John Sculley, and then there was a revolving door of CEOs, Apple did try to develop a clone community, having Macintosh clones. How and why did that fail?
Well, I think it failed because Apple's strength is integrated systems. You know, they make the OS and they make the computer itself. So, you know, combining hardware and software has been their thing. Whereas their competition, they've got the big giant Microsoft, which just develops the OS, and they've got all these companies develop the hardware. And I don't think, you know, Apple really didn't know that market, hadn't done that before, and neither had any hardware manufacturers done that. And it just, it was also at a very bad time. I think the OS, the Mac OS at that time when they did the clones, wasn't at its strongest, like it is now with Mac OS X. So all those things kind of combined make that a failure. I used a few of those clones at the time, and none of them were very impressive.
All right. Great. My guest is Gary Rosenzweig. We're talking about Macs. And I want to come back, Gary, and we'll talk about OS X in just a minute. But before we do, let's just get a little bit more basic for listeners out there who may not own a Macintosh. What do you see as the advantages of the Macintosh over PCs?
Well, it's just a different user interface. It's a lot easier to get into, a lot more intuitive, from the OS itself, just dragging your files and folders around, to the applications that come with it, you know, Mail and Safari, and if you go into iLife and iWork. Also, I think it's what you get when you get the machine. You just get this really nice suite of products like iPhoto, for instance, for managing your photos. They kind of think of, well, what do people use these computers for at home, and let's just give them everything they need to get started right away and do it in a really good way, not just, you know, kind of like here's a simple program to get you started. And when you're more serious, buy something else. They give you the stuff you can use right away and then continue to grow with.
All right. That's a very, very cogent answer. What are some of the disadvantages that the Mac has compared to the PC, besides price, which you've already pointed out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is price, really, when it comes down to it. And then, of course, if you are in a work environment where you're using Windows, and maybe you've been using Windows for years, now if you decide you want to get a computer at home and you're not used to, you know, using Mac OS, then there's a little bit of a learning curve. And I see that all the time. I have a lot of switchers that come to my site, read my books, and, you know, a lot of times the questions I get are, I can't figure out how to do this. I know in Windows I do these five steps. How do I do it on the Mac? And I say, well, it's just this one step. You know, they just didn't realize it was so easy.
That is true. And we're talking to Gary Rosenzweig, who has literally written the book on how to switch from a PC to a Mac. We're talking about Macintosh computers. Well, Gary, you mentioned it at the outset when we were talking in our discussion about clones, is that Apple's strength is the integration of the hardware and the operating system. I mean, and they've guarded that operating system very, very closely, unlike PCs, which default to Microsoft Windows. Now, 27 years after the introduction of the Macintosh, has this been a good decision for Apple?
Well, yeah, I think it's paid off. They've been able to, by knowing exactly what hardware that the software is running on, they've really been able to move faster and build things into the operating system and know they'll work. And they don't have to, you know, compare them to hundreds of variations of PCs and video cards and types of memory and types of, you know, internal systems like Windows has. I mean, it's always going to be a problem. It's two very different approaches to developing an operating system, and both are valid, and it kind of makes sense that there would be these two separate approaches now, the Windows and Mac approach.
Now, in the developer community, of which you are a part of the developer community, mm-hmm. are you starting to see more of a shift, more developers are developing for the Macintosh, or are they switching over to the iOS that Apple has for the iPhone and the iPad? Is that where the sizzle is right now among developers for Apple?
Well, yeah, definitely. You've got two separate things going on. One is the fact that the internal hardware on Macs and PCs have become more similar over the years. They both are based on Intel processors. So you've seen, say, game development companies realize it's very easy for them to basically build the game one time, and it works for both Windows and Mac. Before, that didn't happen. Game developers would actually build it for Windows, and then have to hire a company to translate the entire thing to make a Mac game. Now they can build it. You know, Electronic Arts does this for most of their games. They can just build one game, and it runs on both systems. That's on the computer side. For a lot of small developers, though, the iOS, building iPad and iPhone apps has, you know, been, you know, a huge thing. It's transformed that development community because there's tons of devices out there. The price points are low, so people purchase a lot of different apps. I mean, there's people that maybe they purchase one piece of software a year, if that, and they'll purchase, a few apps every month or every week. So it's easier for a small developer to sell something for a few dollars and actually get some sales.
All right, we're talking to Gary Rosenzweig about Macintosh computers. And, Gary, let me quick fire a question at you right now, since we're talking about the iOS and the iPad, iPhone. Are sales of the iPad cutting into Macintosh computer sales for Apple?
I think they have to somewhat because, you know, you think on the low end, if somebody wants to get something and sit on the sofa and check their email and surf the web, before the iPad existed, you know, you looked at a low-end laptop. So you might have looked at the plain MacBook. And now you may go with the iPad. So it's got to do it somewhat, but then there's also the halo effect with people that may have never considered buying a Mac before, and they get an iPhone or an iPad, and they really like the experience, and then when it's time to buy their next laptop or their next desktop, they think, well, maybe I'll stick with Apple because I really like the experience I got from them from that. So it may be a wash, you know. One might help, one might hurt.
All right. Time will tell. The iPad is relatively new. Even the new iPad 2 is relatively new. We'll have to see about that. Now, one of the most remarkable stories about Apple that I think is underreported in the media is that Apple has successfully negotiated two major changes in the past 10 years, a major overhaul of its operating system and a switch to the Intel chips from the Motorola chips, which you referred to earlier. In what ways are these remarkable achievements for Apple, Gary?
Well, I mean, it's pretty tough to switch in the middle there to a completely new operating system, and yet they had a bridge, you know, they had a time where you could still run the old software, even though they came out with a new operating system. So that was kind of nice that they were able to do that. That time's pretty much gone now. I don't know why you'd be running software that was that old, but, you know, for a while you could. And the same thing with the processors. I mean, they were able to make a bridge between it and kind of have a few years in there where you could move from one to the other. But I think that the change to Intel was a really big one because it allowed people to run multiple operating systems on the same box. They had a lot of people that bought Macs that would install Boot Camp, you know, and allow them to reboot into Windows, and also that will use something like Parallels or VMware Fusion to run Windows in a virtual environment. So it kind of took that whole, like, well, there's this one thing I need to run that only runs on Windows argument away, because you could run both on the same box. And a lot of people did, and a lot of people do.
We're talking to Gary Rosenzweig. And, Gary, in that last answer, you put a dagger through my heart. And the reason is this, that I'm still working with a 10-year-old Apple laptop. You ask who would run a computer or who would run programs that old, and my hand was the first to shoot up. So that's okay, though. Moving on to the next question, and that is cloud computing, because you're involved in all of technology, and certainly you have to be aware of what's going on in cloud computing. What sort of future does cloud computing have for the Macintosh? And let me just set this up. It was Steve Jobs who really started the PC revolution in homes and in offices with the Apple II back in the 1970s. And Tom Watson Sr., who was the CEO of IBM, said at one point there was a need for only about 5 or 6 mainframe computers in the whole world. And then Ken Olson, who was the CEO of Digital Equipment Corporation, came along about a decade later and said, who needs a PC at home or at work? Obviously, neither one of these two men was very prescient about the future. But the cloud computing, it seems to me we've come full circle and returned to the old days of mainframe centrally controlled computing. And if that's true, what is the future of the Macintosh standalone computer in that world?
Well, I think it's going to be kind of a hybrid, because there are things cloud computing does really well and there's things it doesn't do very well. Like if you're a content creator, say you create video, or graphics, or you know, whatever, it's going to be a lot easier to have that application really running on your local machine. Even if internet speeds were to go up a couple levels of magnitude, it still would be easier to be doing it on your local machine. But then for things that we use for communication, like the web and mail and stuff, cloud computing's already taken that over. Most email is already in the cloud, even if the user doesn't realize it. And of course, the entire web is just one big cloud platform. So I think we may see that, that's why the iPad, I think, is such an interesting device, is because it really is a cloud type of device. There are apps on it, but a lot of the stuff you do on it really exists in the cloud. And, it's so easy to jump from an old iPad to a new iPad, because most of the stuff you would do on your iPad would be on the internet and not necessarily something stored locally on the iPad.
All right. Our guest is Gary Rosenzweig, and he is the author of the book MacMost.com Guide to Switching to the Mac. Gary, one last question before I let you go. So much of Apple's mystique and its success is tied up in Steve Jobs. Now, Steve Jobs is on medical leave from the company, and he's got three very capable lieutenants running the company in his absence: Tim Cook, who was the CEO of Intuit, Jonathan Ivey, who is in charge of their design, and Phil Schiller, who is in charge of marketing. What happens to Apple when Jobs leaves or retired? Which of these three men is capable of handling the transition from Jobs for Apple Computer?
Well, I think any of the three probably could, but it's really going to be tough to figure out who it's going to be or how soon that's going to come. There's been a lot written recently about how Steve Jobs is really taking his process of how he does things and integrating it into the upper echelons of Apple, teaching all the managers, down to, the middle management level, how he does things and how, what the real magic is to what he does, so that when he leaves Apple, when he retires, that, he'll basically live on. His thoughts of how he does things and what has made Apple success will live on through all of the management, not just the single person that, ends up taking over being CEO, but perhaps just about everybody there.
Well, it's good that he has a succession plan in mind, because a lot of investors and a lot of people who observe the industry were worried about that. My guest is Gary Rosenzweig. We've been talking to him about Macintoshes. He's the author of the book, MacMost.com, Guide to Switching to the Mac. Gary, if people like what you have to say, if they want to learn more about you, maybe see some of your videos and so forth, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Yeah, just go to MacMost.com, and I put about three new tutorials up every week. Have 500-plus tutorials, most about the Mac, some about iPod, iPhone, iPad, all sorts of other things. So basically, if you just want to learn how to do more with your Apple products, I just put a lot of tutorials and information up there.
All right, Gary. It has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you.
Thanks.